This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Award-winning author Rick Britton joins me live in studio. He's with us every week as we explore the top 25 most significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that took place here in Virginia. And Rick, just as a reminder, because I was thinking about this the other day, Did most of the Civil War take place in Virginia?
Or yeah, about 60%.
Is that what we Virginians tell ourselves, or is it true?
No, that's absolutely true. About 60% of the Civil War was fought in the state of Virginia. You know, and mainly because, well, for a lot of reasons, Virginia was a really populous state, but also the capital of the Confederacy was here at Richmond. So that's one of the main goals of the Lincoln administration is to take the enemy capital. You know, yeah. That's one of the things you want to do. Yeah.
Can I ask you this? Why?
Sure.
Why did they put the capital in Richmond so close to Washington when maybe they could have chosen Atlanta or Birmingham?
It was kind of a reward to Virginians for seceding. I mean, Virginia stayed on the fence for a while. We were in the last group of states to secede from the Union, and really only because, you know, we were torn. The points of view at the time were went both ways, and there were plenty of people, notably in Western Virginia, who didn't want to have anything to do with secession. They had no stake in slavery. There were very few slaves in those counties in what's now West Virginia, very few slaves out there in the western part of the state. And so we sat on the fence, and it wasn't until the Lincoln administration called for 75,000 volunteers to suppress the states that had already seceded, and soon after that, we had the referendum. We had not a referendum, but we had a convention in Richmond, and the vote was taken, and that pretty much put Virginia over the edge. I mean, what the Lincoln administration was asking was for Virginia's share of the 75,000 militiamen to fight what they felt were their brother states and brother and sister states to the south, and that was pretty much too much right there. We weren't willing in Virginia to fight against other Southerners, and so that's what pretty much put us over the edge.
We're talking with Rick Britton, and the phone lines are open, of course, as always, at 977-1070. Today, we're going to talk about the Battle of New Market, which on our list is number 16 as we look at the top 25 battles of the Civil War fought here in Virginia. And this was in the late spring of 1864?
That's right. May 15th, 1864. So the Battle of New Market takes place while the battles in and around Spotsylvania Courthouse were being fought. Remember, we talked about Spotsylvania Courthouse last week, and those battles, it's really a series of battles in and around Spotsylvania Courthouse. They took place between May 9th and May 18th. So this is smack dab in the middle. And It's part of Grant's plan. When Grant was brought east by the Lincoln administration and was made commander-in-chief of all the armies, all the Union armies, and then he decided to put his headquarters with the Army of the Potomac here in Virginia, part of his plan was to have all of the Union armies all over the country that were fighting the war to advance simultaneously. So the Battle of New Market happened because of this plan of Grant's. And when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. In the past, because the Confederacy had interior lines, in other words, they're on the middle and their enemies are trying to attack them from the outside, meaning they could shift armies, they could shift forces using the railroads, using rivers, they could shift forces from one threat to another. It made it a lot simpler.
But if you attack every front at once,
every place at once, right, you can't do that kind of shifting back and forth. So here in Virginia, the idea was Grant personally and Meade with the Army of the Potomac would attack Lee, and that's, of course, what brought on the Battles of the Wilderness and then Spotsylvania Courthouse and then North Anna and then Cold Harbor and then on to Petersburg in the end. Simultaneously with that, a force would come up the peninsula and threaten Richmond from the peninsula like McClellan had, not as big a force as McClellan had. And then a force of about, 15,000 or so would come up the Shenandoah Valley under Franz Sigel and try to take Stanton. And of course, once you take Stanton, Stanton is the direct rail connection to Charlottesville and a railroad connection to Charlottesville. And a lot of foodstuffs, a lot of grain is coming out of the Shenandoah Valley to Stanton over the railroad and through Crozet's Tunnel to Charlottesville and then to points east, supplying Robert E. Lee's army. So if you take Stanton, you kind of, you know, put the kibosh on that whole plan
now
of bringing foodstuffs.
We're talking with Rick Britton. In retrospect, looking back, this this plan of Grant's to advance on all fronts at the same time.
Right.
Was this the beginning of the end? I mean,
yeah, it really is. It really is. Even though here in Virginia, the two other fronts came to naught fairly quickly. So we'll talk about Newmarket here in a moment, but the one coming up of the peninsula got bogged down and really didn't help Grant the way he wanted it to help him with the Army of the Potomac. And this
ended up being a successful strategy.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Because, you know, if you outnumber the enemy and you don't want him to use interior lines, if you advance on all fronts simultaneously, what is he going to do? Someplace he's got to give way, right?
Yeah.
Someplace.
And that's what happened because less than a year later, you have Appomattox.
A little over a year later, yeah. Less than a year.
Yeah,
you're 11
months.
That's right.
You've got Appomattox in April of
1865. So Franz Sigel takes over, and Franz Sigel is an interesting character. He's given command of this army in the Shenandoah Valley to march up and take Stanton. He's an interesting character. He was born in Germany and was in the German military and then immigrated to the United States. And when you think about it, the big waves of immigration to the United States just before the Civil War came from two places primarily, from Germany because of all the revolutions in the 40s, from Germany and then from Ireland because of all of the famines.
Yeah.
So most of these people went into the North. So across the Midwest and out into, Wisconsin, Minnesota, that area had a large German population. Interestingly enough, the Germans tended to vote Republican after they became American citizens. So unfortunately for a lot of Union soldiers in the Civil War, the Lincoln administration courted these German immigrants in order to bolster the German ranks and make sure that they would vote Republican and stay with the Union. And so a lot of men who had come over from Germany became officers in the Union Army. And a number of them were worse than bunglers. They were just terrible. And Sigel is one of the worst of the worst. So he comes.
You mean not effective military men?
Yeah. Just really bad at leading troops. Not on the ball. Not capable of handling the troops in the field.
And
not,
let me clarify one point because some people often, especially in Charlottesville, we often forget this: that when you say go up the valley, we think up means north.
That's
but in this case, it means south.
Yeah, it means going from the northeast to the southwest.
Right. And, so if you go up the valley, you go from Winchester towards
to Stanton.
Stanton.
You're coming up the valley. Yeah, yeah, I know. It's backwards. And what you're talking about when you talk up and down the valley is you're talking the way the rivers flow. So the rivers flow down the valley.
The Shenandoah flows north.
Right, flows north.
Northeast, yeah.
Strangely. Yeah,
yeah,
in the United States.
To Harper's Ferry, the Potomac. Yeah.
Not many rivers in the United States do that. Out in Kentucky, they have a few that flow north into the Ohio, but not a lot of rivers in the United States flow north when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, not
it's
a lot.
It's just all because of the mountains and the plateaus.
That's right. Yeah. And the valley floor, the elevation of the valley floor, which is higher as you come south. So that's why you're coming up also. You're actually going uphill as you come south in Shenandoah Valley. So he comes up the Shenandoah, and of course, as he's advancing, he has to leave detachments behind him, and it kind of fritters away his force. So finally, when he ends up at Newmarket, and he ends up getting confronted by Breckinridge, the former Vice President of the United States, commanding an army of about 4,500, Sigel has about 6,000. At that time. Now, Newmarket was a good place for Sigel to stand and fight. He decided he was going to fight there just north of the little valley town of Newmarket. Beautiful little location.
Yeah, it is pretty there.
It happens to be in a place where the river to the west and Smith's Creek to the east confine the battlefield to a very narrow stretch. So he put his army across that position and allowed Breckinridge to attack him. It's an interesting battle, and it's on my list For a couple of reasons. One, it's one of the most interesting little battles, and I often like to call this the biggest little battle in the Civil War in Virginia. But also, it's interesting because of the participation of the VMI cadets. Now, when Breckinridge was putting together his scratch force, and really it is a scratch force to try to stop Sigel, he went to everybody, including, you know, the superintendent at VMI. And so they marched out the cadets, 250. They had a battalion of infantry, four companies, and a battery of artillery. And he applied to the militias in the various counties. They actually come with him, but they don't make it into the valley. A couple of brigades that had been operating further to the southwest. And so he's able to put together a force of about 4,500. And the battle is fought on May 15th in a driving rainstorm throughout the entire battle. And they finally push him back to that position that I was talking about, which is just north of the town of Newmarket. They push Franz Sigel's forces back. And by the way, one of the problems that Sigel had is every time he would get upset, which was fairly frequent when things got hot in battle, he started cussing in German and giving commands in German. Now, luckily for his troops, there were some German troops with him. There were some recent immigrants, and there were some officers under him who spoke German, who were also Germans. So for those guys, it's okay. But for everybody else, they're going, you know, what the heck is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
You know, so he kind of loses his cool, Sigel. In this situation. Now, the VMI cadets, Breckinridge had never intended for them to actually fight in the battle, in the main battle line. So they were in the reserve line just behind. But the big dramatic moment of the battle, the lines are very close. The Federals might break, but at that moment, a gap is opened up in the very center of the Confederate line, and it happens to be a unit retires from some artillery fire. It happens to be a position that's right in front of where the VMI cadets are, just a couple hundred yards behind them, just south of the Bushong House. It's a beautiful battlefield, by the way.
Yeah,
it's owned by the state, and it's run by VMI, and they do a fantastic job of interpreting the battle. I encourage everybody to go. It's one of the nicest ones in the state of Virginia. At that moment, Breckinridge gets advised by one of his aides that there's a gap in the line, and the aide suggests that he puts in the VMI cadets. And at first, Breckinridge hesitates, but there they are in the position to plug this gap. And he goes, you know, send in the cadets, and may God forgive me the order. Now they go into this position, and soon after that,
how many of them are there? How many cadets?
250. Soon after,
and these are guys who are just, they just walked up for the battle from Lexington, right?
That's right. They marched, yeah. They force marched up from Lexington, and the intention at originally had been for them to be the baggage guard, and then they end up in the reserve line, and then they end up in the battle line where nobody really wanted to put them from the start, from the get go, but they end up in this assault, this final assault. And there are a lot of confusing commands from Sigel. A lot of the federal units that are on the field are very green, had never been in battle before. A battery of artillery that was holding the center of the Union line under another German by the name of Kleiser, von Kleiser, he begins to retire, and this opens up a tremendous possibility just as the Confederate forces are advancing. And the VMI cadets happen to be just in front of von Kleiser's battery as he withdraws, and they capture one of his guns. And this is the beginning of the breakup of the Federal line, and then they actually retire en route, just barely saved by a gentleman by the name of DuPont of the Wilmington, Delaware DuPont family, who has a battery of artillery, and he employs a tactic that's called retiring by prolong. And one way of moving your cannon is by attaching a long rope to the limber. That way you can load it up and fire it and then haul it a little ways down the road and then fire it again. And so he actually leapfrogged his pieces of artillery and held up the Confederate pursuit. And a lot of people credit DuPont's actions there with his artillery as saving a lot of Union soldiers from getting captured. Because, of course, in the flush of victory, the Confederates, you know, were rushing forward and took a lot of prisoners. So Sigel's army retires en route, and they're driven back down the Shenandoah Valley toward Winchester. And it's this tremendous victory for Breckinridge and, of course, for the VMI cadets. Now, we can't tell this story without saying that a lot of things over the years, because of the participation of the youngsters from VMI, a lot of things were exaggerated over the years. For example, some of the early stories.
No, really?
Yes.
Not in American history, no.
Yes, and especially in Virginia, think about
yeah.
it. A little bit exaggerated. You know, some of the early stories have them capturing all of Kleiser's artillery. Of course, Kleiser was actually retiring at the time. Von Kleiser was. They took one of his guns. A lot of people, of course, play up the fact that they were much younger than the other Confederate units on the field. And, you know, you have to qualify this, and I want to say this very carefully. This, the VMI Cadet Battalion, we might have a lot of folks from VMI listening. The VMI Cadet Battalion was the largest conglomeration of youngsters, of younger soldiers on the field. Were they necessarily all the youngest soldiers on the field? Probably not. There are probably a lot of other Confederate soldiers in all the other units that were just as young or maybe even younger
yeah.
in the Army illegally than were the VMI cadets. And here's a piece of the story that not many people talk about very often, and they're starting to tell this story out at New Market, so I commend them on this. The fact that by this time in the war, by 1864, you consider this is kind of a prep school, VMI, a military prep school. A lot of families were putting their youngsters into VMI to keep them out of the war, not to get them into the war, but to keep them out
yeah.
of the fighting in Virginia, which had been so horrific. So a lot of the VMI cadets that were there that day were a little bit older than some of the Confederate soldiers in the forces on either side.
Interesting.
But yeah. were there a lot of youngsters in this one spot? Yes, absolutely. Did they happen to be in the line of battle? Yeah. Did they do an amazing job and actually better than people expected for youngsters to do?
Yeah.
You know, in all of that horror of combat? Yeah, they absolutely did.
We're
so
talking
it's a
with,
great story.
We're talking with Rick Britton. He's online at rickbritton.com. Joins us each week to talk a little Civil War history. What is the Battle of Bloody Shoes or the Field of Bloody Shoes?
So it's you're confusing a few. It's the Field of Lost Shoes.
Okay.
Because of all the rain, there's a depression just to the north of the Bushong House. And so the VMI Cadet Battalion actually charged through this slight depression. You can see it still today where it was very marshy because of the rain, and it actually sucked some of their shoes off. So it's the Field of Lost Shoes.
And that was the VMI cadets charging.
That's right. But
in the Battle of New Market.
Right. But also the units on either side lost some of their shoes, too. So it wasn't just the VMI
yeah.
cadets.
So yeah. what's the takeaway from the Battle of New Market, and how does it fit into this effort, this large-scale you know, battle-wide, war-wide strategy of Grant's to advance everybody at once?
That's a great question. Number one, perhaps the Lincoln administration shouldn't have given so many major generalsies to officers who were bunglers. Number two, it was a huge victory, but just a few weeks later, they came back and actually took Stanton. So it was a Pyrrhic victory. I mean, it was only a brief victory in the Shenandoah Valley, but brief enough that some of those brigades that fought in the Shenandoah Valley were sent to reinforce Robert E. Lee, and were actually at some of the fighting just after Spotsylvania Courthouse.
Rick Britton joins us every week. Rick, thank you so much. And
thank
next
you.
Week, we'll talk about the Battle of Cold Harbor, which
oh
took
boy.
Place just a few weeks after this.
That's right.
Major battle, the summer of 1864. We'll
right.
look forward to that.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.